This is Community Voices on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS.
This is Community Voices on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS. For co-host Bea Bonner, I'm Randy Eccles. Community Voices is conversations with neighbors, artists, and area business people, along with events you might have missed. In a few minutes, historian Graham Peck will share his perspective on President's Day. First, we return to our conversation with Sam Wheeler and the ranking of presidents.
As we look at President's Day, it, I believe, recognizes more than just Washington and Lincoln, but all presidents.
Yeah, it's always good to think about Martin Van Buren on this day too, right?
Well, I was going to say Illinois has not only Lincoln, but also Grant, who was up in Galena at the time, and Barack Obama. Ronald Reagan has some ties to Illinois. Does Illinois, for a Western, and at that time, frontier state, it seems like we have quite a few leaders that have come out of it.
A few years ago, for the Illinois Bicentennial, or 200th birthday celebration, at the museum, I helped curate an exhibit called From Illinois to the White House, where we recognize those individuals who rose from the prairie and became president of the United States. And by our accounting, we had four of them. Ulysses S. Grant did not spend a whole lot of time in Illinois, but my goodness, we claimed him. Anyway, he was here at the outbreak of the war. This is where he gets his first military commission for the Civil War. Of course, Abraham Lincoln, Ronald Reagan, the only president born in Illinois, and then Barack Obama. We did a program with C-SPAN that year. Historians had, ever since 1948, they rank presidents according to greatness. C-SPAN had come out with a book, and so they did an event at our museum. And so we got to discuss the exhibit, and we got to discuss the presidential rankings. And no surprise, Abraham Lincoln had emerged as the number one spot amongst historians as the greatest presidents in American history. But what was interesting to me, I collated a lot of these statistics, and I was able to see that our four presidents that we claim, on average, C-SPAN ranked these presidents in, I think it was 9 or 10 different categories. And our four presidents, we had the highest average ranking amongst any other state. There's other states that had four or more presidents that emerged from those states. We had four heavyweight presidents come from Illinois that left behind, I think, very rich legacies. And so what is it about Illinois? Why did we achieve that status? And I don't think it's just happenstance. I don't think it's just a coincidence. I think Illinois plays a really significant role in American history. We all are familiar with Chicago, but really Illinois' story does stretch from north to south, east to west here in the state. We're here in the middle of the country. We're a transportation hub. There is something to be said for if it'll play in Peoria, it'll play anywhere across the country. The problems that this country has faced over the last couple centuries, you can see those problems in a microcosm here in our state in Illinois. And when our politicians emerge here in Illinois and they can find solutions to those problems here on the local level, more times than not, those solutions, those coalitions, those approaches are applicable to the national scale. We certainly see that with Abraham Lincoln. He carves out such a complicated position on the biggest issue facing his generation, which was American slavery. Lincoln was not an abolitionist, nor was he a pro-slavery man. He said that there was never a time in his life in which he didn't hate slavery. But yet, in his mind, it was impractical to call for the immediate end of slavery. He thought the Constitution protected slavery where it existed in the South. He staked everything on blocking its expansion across the continent into the territories and certainly into the North. That complicated position was argued here on the streets of Springfield in Illinois during the Lincoln-Douglas debates. That's the argument that is showcased here in Illinois for a Senate seat. Just 2 years later, Douglas and Lincoln are two of the four candidates on the national level that battle it out for the president. folks asked Lincoln after he was elected, but before he took office in the winter of 1860-61, can you come out? Can you make a statement? Can you calm those states in the South down that are seceding right now? Assure them that you're not going to attack slavery. And Lincoln said, no. He said, everything that I have to say, I've said. It's all in print. Those comments, by and large, were made here in Illinois. The other presidents that have come from here, the other prominent politicians that have achieved national success, more times than not, you can carve it out. And Illinois was their training ground here on the prairie.
Sam, I really appreciate you taking some time today to discuss Lincoln and presidents. Before we wrap up, is there anybody who is doing real interesting stuff in your perspective on Lincoln and the presidents?
Oh my gosh, yeah. There's so many things that are taking place, sort of new perspectives on Lincoln, as well as other aspects of American history. But I'm a big fan of a fellow named Matthew Pinsker. He has a book coming out called Boss Lincoln. And I think that it will change the way that folks think about Abraham Lincoln, in the sense that it talks about what a party politician and a party leader Abraham Lincoln was in the old Whig Party. And then when the Whigs collapse, everything that he did to ensure that the Republican Party would be successful and not be seen as a radical party. Really interesting. Matt's at Dickinson College, and I'm a big fan of his work. Always a fan of Harold Holzer. And here in Springfield, we've got one of the greatest Lincoln scholars of our generation in Michael Burlingame, certainly.
Well, thanks again. And is there anything else you'd like to let folks know?
I want to say happy Lincoln's birthday and happy President's Day to folks, to keep on keeping on, because the rough times are going to get better. We just have to see this thing through for the time being.
Thank you so much. That's Dr. Sam Wheeler, historian, former state historian, joining us today on Community Voices. We'll be back with more after this.
This is Community Voices on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS.
February celebrations include many things: Black History Month, Valentine's Day, and President's Day. Today, we're learning more about our Lincoln experts in the community.
I'm co-host Bea Bonner. Many days, Community Voices will feature your neighbors, artists, and business people in the area.
Hi, this is Randy Eccles, and you're listening to Community Voices on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS. We want to thank Graham Peck for joining us today. Graham, what we like to do on the show is we like to have people introduce themselves. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it. My name is Graham Peck. I'm a fairly recent resident of Springfield, Illinois. I arrived about a year and a half ago. I came to join the history department at UIS and the Lincoln Center, which has just opened. So we're all very excited about that. My prior tenure as a historian was at St. Xavier University in Chicago. I taught there for 17 years. And prior to that, I had 1 year at Rhodes College in Memphis. And prior to that, I was a graduate student at Northwestern for about 9 years. So my history in Illinois has, at this point, become fairly extended. Prior to that, I was a Californian. And my parents prior to that were immigrants from England. There you get my history in a nutshell.
How did you get drawn to Springfield?
Well, I was recruited by the university. So that was the central thing. I got an email from Michael Burlingame, the famous Lincoln scholar who's in our department. And he said he had been delegated by the administration to ask if I was interested in a position at the university. So that pretty much is the reason why.
One of your passions is Lincoln. Can you tell us about that or any other passion that you have?
I was introduced to Abraham Lincoln as a college student. I was a history undergraduate, and there was a great Civil War professor named Gerald Henning. He taught a course on both the Civil War and on Abraham Lincoln. I fell in love with Abraham Lincoln. We had readings from Don Fehrenbacher, who had a wonderful short edited collection of Lincoln's words. And so, of course, you were getting like the all-star lineup of Lincoln language, because in 200 pages, he picked the best stuff and there's a lot to pick from. So it was pretty much all good. I became very interested also in the origins of the Civil War. And you would never anticipate that something you get interested in a college class could end up eating your professional life. But that actually happened. I ended up going to graduate school in history, which I hadn't remotely contemplated when I was taking his course. I was a first generation college student. I did not know what a PhD was when I showed up on campus. So this was absolutely out of the question, wasn't even in contemplation. Subsequent to that class, I ended up considering it. Some professors suggested it. And I made my way to Illinois in some respects because of Lincoln. I had $1,000 that I'd earned over the summer to apply to graduate programs. And I figured out that I could apply to about 10 with that amount of money, because you have to pay for tests and fees and this sort of thing. Prior to that, though, to figure out which 10, I had 30 envelopes and I decided I was going to send out to get information from 30 schools, because this is prior to the internet. You had to ask them to send you the application materials. So I had 27 envelopes and I finished filling out 27 and I had 3 left. I was looking at these schools and I was a first generation student. I'd never heard of the University of Chicago. I'd never heard of Northwestern, but they were in Illinois. And I had been told, I'd learned there was a thing called fellowships that were important, that you could get a thing called a fellowship and they paid for you to go to school. So I cared in selecting these schools if the source I was using indicated they had fellowship money, and the school Northwestern had a lot of it, which I didn't know at the time that meant they were rich. I just knew that they had these fellowship things. I decided to apply because it was in the land of Lincoln and it had this thing called fellowship money. And it tells you something about my knowledge of academe that I didn't apply to the University of Chicago, because I thought, well, these private schools, they're supposed to be better than state schools, which is sort of this thing I'd imbibed. It's not necessarily true, actually, but I'd imbibed that. And I said, well, a city school, that's got to be worse than a state school. So we'll scratch that off.
Think about how many students are looking for schools and similarly have no real experience, and maybe their parents aren't able to guide them. From your experience, what would you tell a student today who is looking for a college?
First of all, come to UIS. That's the most important thing. But other than that, there's secondary advice. I have a daughter who's a freshman in college. I just went through this last year, and I've got another who is a sophomore, and so we'll be going through it again soon. And I have a very strong opinion on this subject. It's not typical, actually. So I think it is a valuable perspective, whether or not someone agrees with it. And it's this: I think we make much too much about picking a school and the idea that the student's fate hinges on getting the right school. That, I think, is an attitude that, of course, I never experienced that, because I just commuted to the local school that was accessible. That was the only thing that I contemplated. That was never even an issue in my family. I was fortunate just to be able to stay at home. My dad wanted me to kick me out of the house, and we had to get a negotiation that I just got to stay and commute. And then at the end of the 4 years, he's like, out you go. This was not a big thing about where is Graham going to go to college and how are we going to pay for it. The agreement was simply they agreed in the end to pay $2,000 a year. Anything beyond that, I had to pay for. And I was very grateful for that, actually. I didn't have that perspective. But of course, my children, very different. Their dad was a professor. I knew a lot about colleges. They went to a high school where people were concerned about where you went. So naturally, they were in this different atmosphere. My position all along has been, you shouldn't be bankrupting yourself to go to a college. It doesn't make sense. What you're trying to get is an education. You can get an education at a huge number of schools. Most of them have excellent faculty. It's competitive to get faculty positions. It's more important that you go and focus on your work than it is worrying about the branding that universities are doing to say, we're the place where you should be. That is my personal belief that I have discussed with my daughters, and I held strongly to that. She was accepted into NYU and wanted to go. That was her dream school. And I was like, no, you've got a much better option, a place that gave you a very good scholarship, and we're not going to pay a fortune to send you to NYU. That is my position on it. And I think my own experience at Cal State Hayward really reinforced that. I had outstanding professors. I knew almost nothing going in. I was far from being a scholar when I left, but I was in a position where they had turned the ignition key and I was really interested in learning. And that is the profound transformative change that a successful education gives you, whether or not you get it in college, or in some cases, like with Abraham Lincoln, you get it outside of college, you generate it yourself, which is also quite possible. We just normally don't think in those terms anymore.
You mentioned the Center for Lincoln Studies. How does that fit into an education or a university?
Well, I'm very excited about the center, and it just opened. So honestly, it's an experiment in progress. We will find out how it fits into the university. But I think there's certain goals that we have. One, Michael Burlingame, the great Lincoln scholar, already has articulated at the opening ceremony, was that he really desires us to produce some primary source publications. So this is scholarship where you're trying to make primary sources more available, primarily to other scholars, but also to anyone who is able to find a book in a library or purchase a book, they can have access to edited collections. So that's one sort of scholarly side to it. Another thing is to expand Lincoln programming at the university, both in the curriculum and in extracurricular kinds of activities. One way to do that is to teach more Lincoln courses. So I'm going to be offering an online Lincoln course, for instance, fairly soon, probably not next year, but the year after. It's likely that we'll get more students who are interested in coming here in our graduate program, I think, is a distinct possibility. That's something that we would like to see. We have an MA program here at UIS. And it's also possible there could be some kind of Lincoln leadership course or program. That has yet to be worked out. COVID has kind of slowed us a little bit. There's so many different pressures on the university that we've decided to wait in terms of, we've delayed the opening for one thing, but we're also going to delay some of the meetings to get some initiatives going, just because it's pretty difficult to get a bunch of people around a table right now. And then I think there's also going to be additional things like summer seminars, perhaps for high school teachers. I think that's something that Ann Mosley, the director of the center, really desires to do. And I've told her I'm happy to support that and teach the high school teachers in the summer to get the knowledge of Lincoln out to teachers who primarily will be Illinois teachers. And so that will get Abraham Lincoln into the schools. I'm very interested in sponsoring week-long scholarly seminars with graduate students and professors who are working on subjects related to Lincoln. And actually the first one I would like to have would be on abolitionism and anti-slavery politics in antebellum Illinois. So that's kind of on my target list of something I'd like to do.
Dr. Graham Peck on the potential of the new UIS Center for Lincoln Studies. Community Voices is a way to get to know your neighbors in these isolated times. Community Voices airs weekdays at noon and Saturdays at 5.
This is Community Voices on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS.